I was in Smith's Toys, looking at Lego, obviously.
Yeah.
And I was in my customary leather jacket that I wear all the time now, just because it's my bike jacket. It's not because it's the only jacket I have, although it is also the only jacket I have, because I'm poor.
This is true.
And I was stood looking at the Lego section, because why wouldn't you? And there's just like this family went past, and there's a little girl who was like, I want to say like 5 or 6, something like that, and she's wearing a leather jacket as well. And she went, "Hey, matching!" And I went, "Hey, hell yeah!" And then the mum picked her up and ran away.
I mean, I would.
Yeah.
I just went, "Hell yeah!" Why is that? That's not upsetting, is it? That's not something that mothers should be warned about.
Not really. They
haven't had.
I was looking at Lego.
Maybe they haven't had the talk yet about what heaven and hell is, and she would have had many questions. Maybe,
I hadn't even considered the.
I hadn't even considered that.
Because
from the mum's point of view, you're just an adult man that just shouted at her young daughter, "Hell yeah!"
But I'm not like right. I'm not like dressed like Meatloaf or something like that. I'm like I've got a leather jacket on, and then like. Like very clean, new, proper jeans, freshly polished Doc Martens on, and my lanyard that says I work at a special needs college.
looking at the Legos.
Yeah, looking at the Legos.
I refer you back to the special needs college. They said to me today, one of the starters you could consider is Lego. And I was like, mate, I'm so ahead of you there.
Speaking of Lego, we're talking about toys today.
The DeLorean.
For some reason we had to spice it up, and he likes Back to the Future, so we got him dressed up as Martin McFly, and we rented the DeLorean from Belfast to come down. That then said colleague was quite disappointed that it wasn't kitted out like the one in the movie, but it was still cool. It was still well, actually, inside, like, the guy who owned it, he had the flux capacitor, he had the almanac sports book.
Great.
Yes.
Ollie's holding the Lego Doc Brown. Doc Brown as in from Back to the Future, not from Taskmaster.
No. He also had the hoverboard and some other little bits, so he had some props.
I'd worry about having one of those. You'd be like, I'm going to have to make it a bit Back to the Future adjacent, because otherwise it's just garbage.
Yeah. He was a nice guy. He was very happy to just drive down here, and, you know, everyone, like, we were in sort of a less busy side of the docks, but right outside Indeed's building, and a lot of people were coming out to try and take a photo or sit in it whilst we were filming, so that was, that took up some time. But then at the end of the day, we stuck a 360 camera on the back and had to drive around the city. But this was around 4 o'clock, so it was starting to get busy, like, traffic-wise. And the DeLorean needs a lot of air to flow through it to actually keep cool. So we broke down outside the Gaze Bar and on Dame Street, and... for about half an hour we were just sat there and everyone was coming up to take photos. Maybe a good marketing opportunity if we just had our company logo on the car somewhere, everyone that was taking a photo. I just stuck my lanyard on and just like tried to get into people's photos, just see if that would help.
Was it just you? Was it just you in the breakdown, or was it like other people? Like,
No, there was like I was in the car following it, just viewing the 360 camera. It's one of those ones where, like, all the way zoomed in, it kind of looks like you're driving in a video game. It has that sort of perspective to it. But then you can zoom all the way out and it makes it look like, you know, that sort of photography where wherever the spot that you're on, it kind of looks like a mini planet that you're like driving around.
So it's like extreme fisheye almost, isn't it?
Yeah, something like that. So I was just flicking between them and just rolling that. And we could have got a few more landmarks in, but when that broke down, because it takes up a lot of water just to, we had to let it cool down and then fill it up with water again. And it was getting to nearly 5 o'clock and we just said, nah, we've got everything. You could get back on the road to Belfast if you really want.
The best thing that must ever happen to that car must have been Back to the Future, because everybody who's ever driven one was like, yeah, it's a piece of garbage.
Yeah, honestly, it's like driving a Sun Lounger, but not a comfortable one. Like, I was in there for maybe half an hour and then I got out and my back, like, it's horrible. it's really low to the ground. Nightmare to drive. And there's no power steering, so you really have to
properly like you're on the ship in Master and Commander when they're throwing the wheel left to right.
Yeah. No, but it was fun. I can't say I do that every day. And definitely turn some heads, even if the weather wasn't particularly great. But
I know someone who did an event in Vancouver, and they got the car. I don't know how many of them actually exist, but when they were first going to... I talk about this a lot, sorry, Greg. But the Neil Blomkamp / that Halo film that never happened, that became District 9.
Yeah.
They built a Warthog for it that could work, the car from Halo. And it worked to the point where it had independent steering, but you could also turn it to crabbing so it could move sideways. And it said they were driving around Vancouver, it was like the easiest car they ever had that could park, because you could just drive sideways. Yeah. Nice. But then it backfired with that. If you ever see the it's not even a windscreen, but sort of like the canopy of the Warthog on Halo is sort of like incredibly bent perspex. So like you can't see anything out the front of it. You have to sit up like the Master Chief and look over it like, where am I going? But I assumed it would be an event like that, but somehow worse, because it's a giant aluminium slab.
Yeah.
Not aluminium, it's steel, wasn't it? Stainless steel. Yeah.
Never rusts.
Must be a nightmare to replace bits on.
Yeah. Well, the guy's had it for like 20 years, and that was the second time he's ever broke down in it.
That's quite...
What did the breakdown people have, like, did they, like, react to it at all?
Well, no, we didn't, like... Okay, it wasn't like a full-on breakdown, because we just had to wait in the city centre for it to cool down, which is... Like, we got stuck in a bit of traffic, and that was where it was getting too hot and was steaming. We just had to wait.
Was it air cooled then? Was that the problem?
Air cooled, and the water was just, it just couldn't, it's not used to the city temperatures and just sitting in traffic. But he's had it for like 20 years. He's part of a community in Ireland that I think there's about 14 or 15 of them, where they just drive around, like they meet, have occasional meetups of DeLoreans and just drive around. He said last week they all drove to where Father Ted was shot.
Just for that. Imagine like a cavalcade of DeLoreans just like driving.
They were made in Northern Ireland, weren't they?
They were manufactured in Belfast, yeah. So,
yeah. I always think of, there's a guy in, it might be Michigan actually, shout out to Michigan, who has painstakingly recreated the Interceptor as it appears in Mad Max 1.
Uh huh.
And like to the point where he's got like inside it, he's got like there's a sawn off shotgun well, which he has to say, like, it's got a sign on the window to the police, because it's like they're like massively illegal even in America.
Yeah.
But it was like, he describes it, it's like, oh yeah, it's cool owning it, but like it drinks, it does like 3 miles to the gallon. It you can't park. It's endlessly breaking down, and it's basically a piece of garbage to drive. And you sort of go, God, I hope I never drive it, because in my mind, it's the best car in the world. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, you can't avoid it with the DeLorean, because the amount of people that have owned them and said, no, it was shit. So you just know that it was... And all the production stories of it breaking down. Whereas at least with Mad Max, you can sort of in your mind go, no, it's the last... It's the last of the V8 Interceptors, you know.
Yeah.
And everyone... I've just realised Ollie's playing with a hockey puck. I've got one of those. It's in a box.
That was, yeah. I've got
that exact hockey puck in a box.
Same. And now I don't know where it is. I've definitely lost it somewhere.
I think it's in one of these. I'm moving.
Probably in the move.
Anyway.
I can't remember. Anyway.
I was going to ask Ollie how his thing's gone, but he's going to tell us about 20 different things he's been to see. So
just skip all that.
Jurassic Park. Javo, skip all that. Yeah. Ollie's right. We're talking about not toy tie-ins, but things based on toys. Or vice versa. Now, this, you may not be shocked to know, was initially a tie-in with some film that has now like broken all the records. I can't remember the name of it. Mason's looking annoyed at me already that I said this. You actually went to see Barbie, didn't you?
I did, long ago. Last week.
It's a
film.
I'm the only one of the three of us that hasn't been to see it yet, and I do intend to, but I'm just busy and poor. It'll happen.
Well, today's National Cinema Day. You could watch it for... Yeah. How much, Ollie?
Some cinemas are doing it for £2-3 or something like that.
Oh, really?
But, yeah.
It's probably packed.
Maybe. My dad went to see it and he loved it.
Yeah, I checked for Oppenheimer screenings later on, just in case. I was thinking, like, oh, maybe I could go see Oppenheimer again.
No.
That was all sold out.
I loved Oppenheimer, but I am not putting myself through that in a cinema again. Watching it on this television here, where I can pause it and go for a wee.
I would love to take you to a Dolby cinema with proper sound one day, just to have you experience.
Well, it's been years since I've been to a proper IMAX. I know there's a lot of ones that say they're IMAX, which are just sort of really decent cinema screens. But you know, when you go to a proper one with the big, almost Colosseum seating, with the big, you know, the BFI one, for example, which I've been to see. I've told you the first time I went there, haven't I? Well, the only time I've been there.
You went to the
BFI? We got there the week after Star Trek 2009 stopped showing there. And my dad was desperate to watch Star Trek 2009 there. Me too. I love that film, even though, you know, I have many problems with it. I'd still today go and see it on the BFI IMAX. And they closed it in favour of Night at the Museum 2.
what an experience.
Because we'd got there, we went... we may as well. all I remember from that is that I really fancy Amy Adams when she's dressed as Amelia Earhart. But anyway.
You never forget your first.
No, I remember Hank Azaria from that film. That's about the only thing.
Oh, I do remember Hank Azaria. Oh, and the guy, the Pharaoh, he's Rami Malek, wasn't it?
Yeah.
God, that's a terrible film. Anyway. And the Jonas Brothers are in it as well.
Ugh. Of course, yeah. It's that era.
Yeah. So, who wants to go first?
Do you know what? I'd like to go last for a change.
You go last. Well, you went middle last time, and I went last. So, should we rotate it so that I'm first?
Yeah, you go first.
Mason, you go first.
So, I thought about this films based on a toy or... not films, but like media based on a toy in some way. And as much as there's sort of some really obvious ones, my favourite of the films that we talked about when we were first thinking about this was Small Soldiers, which is not what my pick is, for the record.
Oh.
But so I'm not going to go any deeper into that, on the off chance that one of you have picked it. I'm a little bit annoyed with myself again, because I've picked a thing that's a bit niche and I don't think you'll have heard of. But okay, at least that this time I'm first, so I can't bring it all to a staggering halt like I did last time. are you familiar with the Army Men series?
Yeah.
Or what?
You mean, like, are you on about the games?
Army Men series. The video games, yes.
They're about, like, yeah, little green Army Men from, like, Toy Story. They made, like, a...
Yeah, basically, imagine the Army Men from Toy Story, if they had a... And they had it, and it was arguably before Toy Story, a bunch of them. I don't know if it was... The one I've picked one in specific.
This is very
which is called
niche. Okay, okay.
Army Men, Sarge's Heroes is the one I'll pick. I'm now going to describe it in a way that I think will actually make Mason really want to play it.
Right, so, here we go.
It's set in a world. Every game would start. The first one, I used to play it with my dad all the time.
In a world.
In a world. Now, when me and my dad played, the first one was called... the first one we played was called Land, Sea and Air, which I think was 1995, maybe it came out. And it basically was, imagine if you played Medal of Honor, a World War II game. Oh, dear. But
I was just like, there's loads of them.
There's fucking loads of them. Buckle in. We played Land, Sea and Air, which was essentially, imagine if you took a Medal of Honor game from that era and you, instead of them being humans, it was the green plastic army versus the tan plastic army, which is the colour of the thing. When you say it out loud, it sounds quite troublesome, but it isn't, because the tan plastic army is supposed to be like the fascists. So there's those toys you could get. Use the army man, you'd get the grey ones or the green ones. And it was just basically you played what would be an extremely violent game, but wasn't, because there was no blood and they were all plastic, which I think is why my dad was okay with me playing them at a distressingly young age when you actually analyse it. But I remember playing it with my uncle once, and my uncle used a flamethrower on my dad, because it was our first multiplayer experience, really. My dad used a flamethrower on my dad's soldier. If you use a flamethrower on a plastic soldier, what happens? You're right, they die screaming in a puddle of their own plastic. The one that I've picked is called Sarge's Heroes, which was from 1997. I've got it open here because I was rereading it. 1999. Sorry,
I think I was playing games in 97. Yeah.
I was there way before. So Sarge's Heroes. The other thing I was going to say is they all start off with newsreels in the style of the Second World War. But it would go, green plastic news on the march. And then it would give you, the evil General Plastro has invaded Green Canyon, something. Army Men Sarge's Heroes took it up a notch where they were attacked using a special weird portal technology by the Tan Army, which takes you to this mystical land. And the mystical land was our universe. So they were fighting as army men in like a kitchen or at that scale as well. So tiny scale, running along sort of like work boards or like that. I remember one where you had to track down a spy and you had to fight around the side of a bathtub. Like it was one of my early experiences of narrative gameplay, really. After this, it was like Sonic and then Army Men. But I still think about it to this day. As Ollie said, Sarge's Heroes is very. It was a squad that you were trying to as you went on, you rescued and you reassembled Sarge's squad, who were all the guy who was like the special weapons, the sniper, uh-huh. the sort of that kind of thing, and you'd go, you'd end up like there's a great sniper level where there's like you're trying to wake your way down the staircase. It's like imagine playing as the soldiers from Toy Story within the Toy Story world. And I just found that enchanting, just sort of like that idea. And I still think it's a good idea that you could make a film out of or a series. As Ollie said, there's about a million of them. There's so many of them. They haven't made one for a long, long time. The last one I played was the first PS2 one, which was kind of garbage. There was one called Army Men Air Attack, where you were flying helicopters around houses. Like, it was... I don't know whether or not I've sold this, but it's all I could think of when we talked about game tie-ins. And I'm really trying to think of what bit of audio I'm going to put as the intermittent bit.
I have no idea. You should put that bit in the Toy Story where they go like, go on without me.
Well, that's it. Imagine that. That's essentially Sarge. Sarge's character. A good soldier never leaves a man behind. It's that hyper sort of jingoistic, but it isn't, because it's plastic soldiers fighting a pointless war.
Did you ever have Green Army Men toys, or did they ever make them?
We absolutely had them when we were growing up, because of this. Not because it's more of an American thing, really, those toys, isn't it?
I remember we'd get like, you go to someone's birthday party and they give out like the goodie bag type things, and you just always have like a plastic Army Man with the parachute.
Yes, they're in them as well, with the weird like plastic, and then they're fighting with the parachute still sort of like lingering behind them as they're running. And they run like with the little, like they're glued to a surfboard, you know, the sort of that sort of it's I'll find a clip that I will put in there. I'm going to have to do it from the actual series, Ollie, rather than from Toy Story. But the best way I can sell it is imagine a game where you're playing as those guys in Toy Story. And
are the missions are they like toy based missions, like, or are they part of like the scenarios and things like
the initial that, like... ones are all in their universe, so it's like you're in their boot camp, you're in their base is attacked by General Plastro and the Ten Army, and they're like using, you have to repel an attack like with their tanks. It's like a real world thing, but then they kidnap the general. Your I can't remember what your general's called, but they kidnap his daughter through the portal, and you follow them through, and then you end up in our world. Like, you're in the kitchen, you're like, whoa, what has happened? You know, so it mixes and matches it. Like, the fact I think the reason why I'd like it to come back is I think these days you could really make a fun game, like tower defense game or something like that, where it's just you're in a kitchen and you have to build out of like Lego or whatever.
There is, I'm not sure what it's called or even if it's out yet, but I've seen like some gameplay footage of. It could be Fortnite or something. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Where it is just a bunch of toys and stuff just fighting each other in like a kid's bedroom. And I don't know what I don't know what that is, but I've definitely seen something like that recently.
I recommended some many, many, many months ago now a series by a guy called Red Nomster on YouTube where he was unlocking secrets in Halo Infinite, I think it was the one he was in. But the he makes levels for Halo Infinite now, and he's made one which is just, I think I sent it to you, where he recreated Andy's bedroom from Toy Story.
That but might
where
be
the
it.
The Spartans are toy scale.
That might be it.
And that was, I was playing that, and I was like, this is like, this. You could do Army Men really good now.
But
that's my pick. Army Men, Sarge's Heroes. Like I said, I'm going to try to be less niche as they go on, but I wanted to get Army Men out there. So if anybody important is listening, I want another Army Men game.
Hey, if we all did really predictable things, like, no one would listen to this, so
exactly.
Well, exactly. It also shows that I do Ollie's. Have it, like, whenever I slag off some of Ollie's cinema suggestions or anything like that, and then we very rarely dug into the fact that I've got niche sort of favorite things. It's weird because, like, obviously I always talk about my favorite game of all time being Homeworld, and like, actually that would be quite a weird niche thing had they not just announced a third one, you know. Like, you'd be going, why is he obsessed with this game from 1997 that's sort of nobody, you know, that kind of thing. I stand by on obviously I've gone back and watched in preparation for this, watched it, and you go, bloody hell, this is dated in terms of, I mean, it's like, it's late 90s like coding, like, things have come along, shooters have come a hell of a long way before that. Like, this is before, it was a console shooter before Halo. That's how dated it, you know, it just didn't work. But like, I just think it's, there's a time for it to come back, and I think it would, and I think you could even make a great, I've even, not the same story, but I said to you, like, I like the Borrowers concept. I think it'd be cool if you did like a Honey, I Shrunk the Kids thing, where it's like society accidentally gets shrunk and they have to learn how to survive in their own houses. You know, their house becomes a sort of death zone because of animals or whatever in it. It's sort of, it's a thing that I find quite interesting. And Sarge's Heroes, they made a second one that I never played, but Sarge's Heroes I remember quite well. And like, my dad will quote it still now.
From across the ocean and around the globe, bringing the latest news home to you. War. The Tan War Machine has begun to mobilize in their quest for world domination. Here we see the tyrannical Tan Commander as he vows to capture and destroy all green territories and claim them for his own.
I love the tagline, though. Real combat, plastic men. Great.
Cool.
Who did I say was second?
Me.
Mason.
Cool.
Carter.
Okay. Let me get this right. It was, the year was 1996.
Oh, hello. Hang on. Settle down, everybody. Yeah.
1996. A big film. Ensemble cast. it had award-winning
director.
Sorry, I
see where the joke's going. Carry on.
It definitely has a place, a staple in today's modern culture. Everyone it loves and adores. It's Mars Attacks. I don't really know why I'm choosing this, but I It was actually based on a card game, a Topps trading cards game, where you get the bubble gum and you get some trading cards.
It's a good argument, though. That's a good, like, you've managed to...
I thought it was a bit... I thought it was just interesting to bring it up because all the other ones just seem a bit obvious.
Yes.
But, you know, yeah. I do enjoy it. I know it gets a mixed rap, but yeah, I think it's a really bizarre homage to 1950s sci-fi, which I'm reading up now. It's originally intended to have ILM do stop motion animation. But it's they had to with budget limitations. They went with computer animation, and it's one of those bizarre things. It's just it's literally just a Martian invasion of Earth, but you got all these wacky characters. Like, you're not asking much from Jack Nicholson, Danny DeVito, Glenn Close, Piers Brosnan, Tom Jones.
Tim Burton directing.
Tim Burton directing as well.
I'm not seen it. It's one of those.
You're not seen it?
You never seen Mars Attacks?
No, not seen it.
Okay.
I watched that very young. I watched it not long after it came out, I think. I went through an Independence Day phase in sort of 2000.
It's sort of in that era of... of invasion movies, where it's just so stupid and so like when it came to just thinking of best toy or media based on a toy, then there's always sort of like a pre-existing narrative, like the Transformers films. You get that, the good ones, the bad ones, and you sort of fit it around that, but. With this, it's literally just an like, how do you elevate a Martian invasion? I think there's elements of, you know, like Airplane or Naked Gun. I mean, it's not to those degrees of comedy, but it certainly tries. Michael J. Fox is in it as well. I forgot.
Yeah.
Sarah Jessica Parker. Natalie Portman, Jack Black.
Oh yeah, very young.
Yeah, Jack Black for like one scene, I think.
Yeah, he's the brother. He's the brother who joins the army, isn't he?
Martin Short. and recently, I've been on a bit of a YouTube rabbit hole with Martin Short putting down or roasting Conan O'Brien. Or other late night hosts. Yeah, I don't know what else to say other than I think it's fun. I think it's definitely one of the more interesting Tim Burton films that he's put out.
It's before Tim Burton sort of became so indulgent in his
own he became aware of himself and his
style. Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah,
because it's very obviously a Tim Burton film in the same way that Wes Anderson films are very obviously Wes Anderson, but it's not like when you say it's like a very obvious Tim Burton film, people think, oh, it's all sort of like weird and sort of, was it German expressionism, isn't it?
They say,
or whatever it is. Yeah. It's not like that at all, really.
No.
But it's just weird. weird film.
I'm just looking at the Mars Attacks trading card game. 5 cents, space adventure, bubblegum. You get bubblegum with it, apparently.
Well, they are, it's weird because in that period, I don't know why, but I went into it. I think my granddad actually had a box set of black and white films that were all sort of like It Came From Beneath the Sea was in there. Mm-hmm. And like, I think there was one called Earth Versus the Flying Saucers, which is a hilarious name.
Yeah.
But that's where the thing of knocking over the Washington Memorial comes from.
Yeah.
Oh.
Like in that, they knock over the Washington Memorial, whereas in Mars Attacks, they knock it over, and then they knock it over the other way to kill more people. You know, like they knock it over at twice. That's in Mars Attacks, isn't it?
I'm sure.
Yeah, I love those.
There's weird references to that kind of thing.
Yeah, I love the aesthetic of those sort of B movie early sci-fi films. So like,
yeah, there was something like else in that selection
and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, yeah, it was that sort of thing. Yeah, there was. I'm trying to remember. There was other things in that series that were like actual proper like well-known films, but I can't remember what they are.
Just one
of them sat on his mantle. Yeah.
That's just how they talk.
Yeah, it's very. As most disaster films were in the late 90s, it's very obviously before 9/11.
Yes.
Because there's a bit where Congress gets absolutely totaled and it's like played for laughs.
Yeah.
Which I think even the Americans wouldn't even really be able to do now.
No.
Do you know what I mean? Like it was back then it was funny, but you know, all the disaster films stopped quite quickly after that, as you may recall.
There's definitely something about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd say give it a watch, Ollie. It's just
definitely on my sort of valley.
It's nice that Michael J. Fox gets a chance to just be sort of neurotic.
Yeah,
because he's really funny as a neurotic guy. I think they missed a trick not having him in more films like that.
The whole scene where the saucer first comes down and they make first contact, and then just the blowout of that is a great scene. And yeah, it's I don't think there's many screwball comedies. I don't know. What would you define as a screwball comedy? I'd say that.
Yeah, like something.
Anything fun, that's like got like
pop star never stops ever stopping, or like a hot rod, that sort of. Yeah,
I'm not even sure. Like something with an ensemble cast that are not necessarily all comedians. And then you just do something that's so batshit random as this. Maybe Rat Race. I don't know. That comes to mind. But I think that was a lot of comedic.
A lot of those where it was... Yeah, that's the problem. People sort of think of... A lot of the comedy, quote-unquote comedy actors of that era and before, I don't really think much of. Like Chevy Chase, I don't really rate as that funny in a lot of stuff. Martin Short, as you pre-mentioned, I find hilarious in a lot of things.
Steve Martin's good in this.
Steve Martin, Martin Short, and I know there's that series that I've not watched that's out at the minute with them in it, but they play great off each other as each other's straight man.
Yeah.
Which sort of work, like if you ever watch The Three Amigos, which is I don't know if it's aged poorly. I've not watched it for years, but those two are great off each other in that. Chevy Chase is also there, but Chevy Chase is quite funny in that as well. But it's like I feel like a lot of those screwball comedies that star people that shouldn't really be in them are because of Airplane and The Naked Gun, where they just put Leslie Nielsen. When you look at it, he should not have worked in any of those roles.
No. But
by far is the funniest. I've hurt myself laughing regularly at Leslie Nielsen clips just because he was just naturally so funny.
Yeah, he has this effervescent, just sort of like. Foolishness to him that just sort of like he's clueless in like half the time, and he acts like he's never clueless, and it's just always always funny.
I find myself laughing at clips from that and from like Martin Short and things, but like clips where from The Naked Gun again, like the where Ricardo Montalban offers him a cigar and he goes Cuba, and he goes no, Dutch Irish, my grandfather was from Wales. It's just such a that isn't a funny line, but it is because of the way he delivers it, just is like not being aware of it. And Michael J. Fox is my runner, the one I remember most about that. But then even like Pierce Brosnan's playing a hyper Pierce Brosnan role, like he's clearly aware of, like he's playing a suave man but on steroids almost, isn't he? Like, did he Copperfield? I saw him Copperfield. I might rewatch Not Mars Attacks soon. It's been a long time.
I don't know what it's on at the minute, but definitely give it. It's definitely an interesting, funny, bizarre watch. A bit like Barbie.
Okay, cool. So I'll go on to my pick. So I was having a little bit of a think about
give a space where I'll edit there. Yeah. I'll edit a space there.
Yeah.
Go on. I just realised as well that I didn't really do an introduction either. I probably should do that later on. But carry on, Ollie.
I was thinking different various styles of toy movie. There's been a lot of varieties, and in terms of like, we've got films based on toys, we've got films about toys, like we have classics, obviously we have Toy Story, which not necessarily about toys, but about life cycles and stuff like that. And
but the toys in it as well are all either genuine toys or based in some way on something genuine. Like the like I said, the Army Men were real. Yeah. Mr. Potato Head is very real. You know?
And then I was thinking about franchises that were made to be toys. Like, say, you've got your Transformers, and you've got your Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, and you've got your your G.I. Joes and stuff like that. They've created He-Mans. They created series and stuff like that to basically advertise the toys and things like that. And I was thinking of that era of toy.
I don't know where he's going with this. I have no idea.
So the film I wanted to focus on...
There we go.
Is one that celebrates the art of toys and play itself. And that's the Lego Movie from 2014.
Oh,
shit, I didn't even think about that. That's quite...
Yeah. That was my second choice, because I thought one of you would pick it, but...
No, I forgot about the Lego Movie. I would never have even thought about that.
So the Lego Movie 2014, everyone sort of had this sort of self-doubt about the film, whether it would be good, because it's just one of... At the time, it was considered like, why would you make a film about Lego? Like, would there be any kind of narrative to it? What sort of... idea, it's just going to be an IP thing just to sell toys, etc. What they did with it was create that sort of, they took that idea and tone and sort of like went, okay, what do we like to do with Lego and what's the creative aspect? Okay, if a world of Lego existed, it would just be chaotic and full of all these constant IP and different various styles of imagination. And then they add the element towards the end of the film where it's taking from the point of view of a child, and it's his idea of play and stuff like that, creating that concept of like, oh, okay, this is like a child's imagination come to life on a big screen. And then what happens if someone tries to like interrupt that play, etc. So yeah, it's the most toy movie I think you can get, because it is about play, and it's about like that inspiration that toys give you, like your imagination. Like, how many of us like remember toys like creating our own narrative, like among these toys, etc. That's one of the best aspects of toys, is you could create your own narrative. It's what builds children's imaginations. Like, and we do it all on some level. I mean, people used to play football with a tennis ball, imagining that was a football, etc. Like, you know, and you take your little Marvel figures and you create superhero stories. I think that's the most important aspect of what a toy is and can be for people, and I think that's what the Lego Movie does best at, in terms of thing. And it's funny as well. It's creative, it's beautifully stunning animation that you can see. It's got this sort of stop motion aesthetic that they look like real Lego figures. There's scratches on there. So they took this weird, bizarre idea that shouldn't have worked on paper and made a thoroughly great film, I think, from it. Yeah.
You know, I once stepped on a Lego brick.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, no way. That's so such an odd experience.
And I imagined it was the biggest piece of shit I could ever imagine, and I just threw it across the room. And No, I do like Lego. Well, I don't know what.
You can't not like that.
Yeah, I remember there was that James May do it or Jonathan Ross? They like counted down.
Maybe James, like the top toys of all time.
Yeah. And Lego was number one. And I don't think you can really argue that, because the possibilities are endless with just a brick. So, no, but I think to sort of bring it round to my idea again of, I think the best ones, like, there isn't a pre-existing story. They made some memorable characters, a really compelling story, all formed around this toy and the world that they created, or going between the different worlds. of all the different eras of Lego. So if you were a big fan, or you've been a fan since you were a kid and seen it through the years, there's a lot of gags in it for that. And also just bringing in like new audiences and like showing their
oh, it definitely worked as a sales pitch for Lego.
Oh, well, yeah. Which first and foremost, it kind of is. Yeah.
I never watched the second one. I don't know anybody who's seen the second one.
No, I haven't seen the second one. I saw the Lego Batman movie, and I never saw Lego Ninjago either. But yeah, they made.
I watched the Lego Batman movie. I don't remember anything about it. No. I remember the opening where he's like, "You're not even my biggest enemy," and then like Joker's upset, and then I don't remember the rest of it.
No, I remember my friend. My name is Richard Grayson. My friends call me Dick. Kids are so cruel.
Actually, yeah, that's
a Frank Drebin line, though. That is, isn't it? Yeah. Kids can be so cruel.
yeah, just like bits like that.
No, I think the Lego movie is a good call.
I think it's the one that celebrates the idea of what toys,
yeah,
what's important about toys, etc. But yeah, that's
I do think studios have been trying to replicate that.
Oh yeah, desperately.
Of course, yeah. There's been countless sort of attempts to try and coin that, and I think the most successful sort of development I've seen recently is of late Barbie in terms of like what it's tried to.
But that's I think Barbie is the other way around. I think Barbie's now the one they will be chasing.
Barbie is what they're chasing in terms of like Barbie is now the next step in terms of like we took an IP and made a creative, original sort of way of viewing it, and then you know we're taking it, and then now Mattel have decided like instead of like going now Warner Bros. Is going like instead of like you know creating more female directors to have larger budgets, and
they're taking entirely the wrong lessons from it essentially.
Yeah, they've gone like let's make an Udo movie. I can give you a whole list of like Mattel are trying to make.
I think this would be quite interesting.
Yeah,
go on.
Let's go through the Mattel list.
The Mattel Cinematic Universe.
This is just Mattel. Think about all the other people. Can I tell you what idea I had a while ago? Because I went this is another weird London thing. When I went down to London with my folks, we went to the... This is while I was very still young. Not very young, but I was still young. We went to the O2, where the cinema is there. And we're like, let's go and see something on the big screen there. The only thing that was playing then was G.I. Joe, The Rise of Cobra. Which is, incidentally, garbage. But I always thought, even then I thought, wouldn't it be funny if... Because G.I. Joe is... They brought it over here, but they called him Action Man, didn't they?
Yeah.
I
think it would be funny if you made... I don't
know
if
G.I. Joe and I'm Action Man are completely different...
No, but I don't know if it was specifically it or whether or not.
Yeah.
I think it would be funny to make an Action Man film, which was a parody of this kind of film.
Oh yeah,
because Action Man himself is a parody. Make Action Man cool by being like, or even if you did it sort of like in the last episode when I talked about Wolfenstein, make it sort of like where he's just sick of this. He doesn't want to fight anymore.
The name, you know? The name Action Man itself is inherently a silly idea. Yeah. And Dr. X and stuff like that. You remember that advert? It was like it was Action Man and Dr. X and stuff like that, and their last fight and stuff like that. And they asked people to vote for the fate of Dr. X and stuff like that. You could choose online whether Dr. X lives or dies and stuff like that.
Yeah, I have
and
a memory about
that.
They
ended up like choosing. Oh no, Dr. X should die and stuff.
Oh wow! Just breaks his neck.
Yeah, and then like
this is what you wanted me to do, children.
Yeah, but like all supervillains, he comes back as like some sort of monster kind of guy and whatnot. Yeah, but, Action Man. That was an interesting.
I remember I had a PC game of it, and it just kept crashing all the time.
Yeah, I remember this sort of like. Era toys where it was like Max Steel and Action
Max
Man.
Steel, I remember Max Steel.
Yeah, sort of like very like the 90s toys were very like broad man and
I'm just reading on the Action Man Wikipedia page. In 2012, film studio Emmett Furter Oasis Films signed a deal to work on a cinematic feature length live action adaptation of Action Man with Hasbro as its subsidiary company, Allspark Pictures. which I assume was something to do with Transformers, along with other Hasbro properties such as the board game Monopoly with Lionsgate and Hungry Hungry Hippos. The expectation was that work on the first film, Monopoly, would start in 2013. Ollie, have we got any update on that?
No, it's not been any update, no.
They've had 10 years.
Yeah, I don't think Action Man is covered under Mattel. So they've got...
Hasbro. He's Hasbro.
Oh, Hasbro, yeah. The enemy of... Yeah. Actually, they're doing like a G.I. Joe thing with Transformers now. They're crossing them over now. So that's what they're what they're planning, but yeah.
God.
Yeah,
God. Christopher Eccleston deserves so much better.
Oh, God, yeah, he does. He's had some crappy Hollywood roles.
He's been quite open how he
hates them.
But yeah, he basically did it for the paycheck.
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah.
And he regrets.
So what Mattel have got in the works? They've got Polly Pocket, which is basically Hot Wheels by J.J. Abrams.
How often I was called Polly Pocket at school? It's still happening.
I had a girl call me
31 years of this.
I was dating someone that recently nicknamed me Ollie Pocket, so that happened.
I thought it was Ollie Lolly.
That was another one.
That was a different person.
Oh. No, it was the same person.
Do you have pet names for him? It's quite struggling.
There's an Uno movie, which I'm not sure how they're going to...
Wait, we're skipping over Hot Wheels by J.J. Abrams. So
yeah, J.J. Abrams is teaming up with Mattel and Warner Bros. To bring an emotional, grounded and gritty depiction of the toy car brand to life.
Oh, shit. And
that
it's going to have a mystery box.
You can't drive with all those lens flares. You can't see the road.
It'd be crashing all over the place. That's probably where the R rating comes from, or whatever they're planning. They're not doing R rated. I'll just put it out there.
See, that's where Action Man, they could do R rating, where it's just horrible. Yeah. Just like there's blood everywhere. It's just...
The Magic 8-Ball movie has apparently been written by the cocaine writer, Jimmy Warden. It's going to be a horror film. So it's like an R-rated horror film based on the Magic 8-Ball. You know that ball.
If they leave them to it, you could make something quite good on that concept, where it's like this haunted item or this sort of like...
Yeah. I'll tell you which one I'm interested in, just for personal reasons. The Barney one being produced by Daniel Kaluuya.
When you say for personal reasons... What did Barney do to you?
Barney did nothing.
Where did he touch you? Was it Baby Bop?
Barney turned me into a cinema rag. That's what Barney did.
Was it the other one? What was the other one called?
Oh, God.
What was this Baby Bop? What was the other one?
I don't know. I can't remember.
AJ? Was he called AJ?
AJ, no, yeah. Are you talking about AJ, the little yellow one? Yeah.
I don't know what colour he is, but it's the little Triceratops.
Hold on.
No.
Barney characters are still going out.
This is it. Hour two, we got over within 10 minutes.
There's Baby Bop, yeah, that was
Baby
one,
Bop.
Yeah.
I said Baby Bop, didn't I?
Yeah, you did, yeah. But yeah, Daniel Kaluuya is producing a Barney film, which is apparently going to have sort of a Charlie Kaufman, Spike Jonze sort of tone to it, and it's about a 30-something-year-old who's sort of dealing with personal issues and stuff like that. And apparently...
It's Christopher Robin.
It might be like that Christopher Robin film, maybe, but like, yeah, apparently it's something. Apparently it's a surrealistic take on Barney, so it'll be interesting to see.
It'll be a fucking T-Rex.
It'll be
Jurassic.
No, but like, I'd be interested in it because like, I grew up with Barney, so it'd be interesting to like see. And Daniel Kaluuya behind
it. You're the only person who grew up with Barney. We were all in the 90s, Ollie.
I have a personal experience.
It bypassed me slightly. My brother had the talking Barney that if you watched the film while Barney was on, he would comment on the film.
Yeah.
Glad Tom Scar's just made a video about the Barney film, because there's bits of that I thought I'd made up. And I had there's a bit where a guy's frying up like burgers and stuff just while driving. And it's been in my head for years, like, that can't have happened. No one would put that in a film. It's in the film.
Yeah, it's in the film. It's baffling. There. I always thought that was an actual thing that happened in vehicles.
And I mean it for like, I think I must have discussed it with you at university as well, because for like 20 years I was sat there going, is this real? Have I imagined this bit where there's a car crash caused by a guy frying, like, he gets all the stuff out?
It's bizarre, isn't it?
It's got like ice cream at the top of the car.
It's like, no wonder where all my taste came from. like all this sort of.
You were just broken by Barney's great
adventure.
Barney
broke me. Yeah, I remember. That's what Barney did to me. Vin the Family Man Diesel is working on a Rock and Sock'em Robots movie.
They already had one of them.
Did anyone ever have a
Rock and Sock'em Robots?
They did.
Yeah, but they already did it. Called
Real Steel with Hugh Jackman. Well, they're doing it again.
Oh, okay. No, I went to someone's house where they had one. They were more American, they were, I think.
Yeah. What the hell are Boglins?
Oh my God, Oliver, you don't know what a Boglin is. Are they making a Boglin film?
They're making a Boglin film.
Boglins only works if they make it in the same vein as Gremlins. That's the only way that it would work. Boglins were like little ball things. They were.
Oh, is it what?
They look like. Yeah.
Squeezy.
You know, when you see them, you'll go, oh, those things.
Oh, God.
Yeah. He-Man's still in development. That's been in development for flipping years, that one. That's been. Like, I don't
What's
know if
that,
that'll ever get. He-Man? Like, they've been trying to make a. They've been trying to get a He-Man film off the ground for the last 20 years. So they haven't.
He-Man only works if it's tongue-in-cheek or it's full bore as well. Like, if they go the full Flash Gordon.
I think they want to go serious with it. I don't know, but like, yeah, I think it's gone through so many different hands.
The only
like
thing people constantly remember about He-Man is, by the power of Grayskull, I have the power, and yeah, that's it. They're the three things.
Yeah.
He-Man! Skeletor has to sound like that.
Well, yeah. Was there the Dolph Lundgren film?
Yes,
there was.
It started off well, and then it just soon ran out of money, and it just got progressively worse until it just ended. If you ever watch a video on that, it's quite interesting.
I've watched bits of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Did Dolph Lundgren show up in?
In what?
Cobra Kai. Am I imagining that?
Imagining that.
Wasn't he one of
the... I thought Dolph Lundgren was cancelled.
Why? Who was it? No. Roll back. Cobra Kai, the people who are running the karate competition.
Yeah.
Who was that? One of those was someone, and I was like...
No.
I've got to check now. Sorry, I'm sure it was Dolph Lundgren showed up in Cobra Kai.
I don't think so.
Oh, Dolph.
They're making
Lundgren.
A Matchbox film, apparently. Matchbox cars, did you ever play with it?
There was a great Matchbox game growing up. I loved playing that.
Yeah, I've seen a picture of it here, yeah.
Yeah, where it's like top down.
Yeah, Thomas the Tank Engine, apparently that's coming back. Did you ever watch that?
Thomas the Tank Engine, you ever heard of Thomas the Tank Engine? Well, that's niche, guys. Sorry.
Yes,
are they going to explain why there's faces on the trains?
I don't think you can.
Did you never watch
the film?
Some
scientific
experiment
went wrong. It just turned people into trains.
Yeah.
The film is astonishing because in it, there's a portal between our world and the world that those trains come from, which is weird because in the books, it's literally just an island.
I remember the film, yeah. I had a little video, with a toy Thomas in it.
Brilliant.
You did a weird hand gesture there.
I tried to ignore that. He did this. It was like there was a little like that. In it, they say there's a train that controls this sort of magical realm. That's like that creates all these trains that way. And the train in it is played by Britt Allcroft, who was the producer of the series. So she cast herself as God.
Oh wow!
Which is astonishing when you think about it. Do you remember the Brit? We went do 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 do. It says Brit Allcroft Productions.
They should just not apply logic to films like this.
No,
no.
I think they should have it where they can come to Britain, and it's just like Gordon sat trying to talk to the trains in St. Pancras, and they're all just really quiet. And he goes, "Oh, you're all very quiet today." Get Ringo back as well.
There is I was thinking about this the other day, but there is a significance to the little preschool aimed films, like, you know, your Barneys and your Paw Patrol movies and all them.
Yes.
It's like they're sort of your first for a lot of kids, they're their first introduction to films, etc., and things like that. So you have to establish.
That's just your own personal experience with Barney.
Oh, fuck
Ollie.
Off.
That's just. I'm sorry, but if the first Barney movie is going to bring anyone into the realm of films, I think you're just you're a unique case for that.
Shut up.
I'm
and believing that cooking burgers in a car is a normal thing to do.
I saw a sign at one of these SAG AFTRA events, which that said all dogs go to heaven except for those class traitors in the Paw Patrol. And I've been thinking about it for weeks.
The narcs.
They ain't going to heaven. They ain't getting into heaven. I need to look at season 4.
Apart from Chase, he's all right.
How do you know all of the dogs from...
I've got kids in the family that I talk to them about these things. So...
You try...
I've seen the old Peppa Pig episode here.
You try and get them to watch the Barney... You try and get them to watch the Barney movie. And...
No. To be fair, I'm looking for an excuse to watch this Bluey show that everyone's hyping up about.
Why?
I don't
Why
know. Do you watch... I don't know. I'm just curious because everyone hypes up about Bluey and I'm like... Oh.
Who?
Who is Who? Everyone?
Who's everyone?
People. People like Bluey. It's like, apparently everyone's like, Bluey's like really thought-provoking and like well-made and like apparently.
I don't know who you talk to, Ollie.
People.
This isn't...
Society. Society says Bluey's good. I don't know. The internet.
Anyway, that's that thrilling line of conversation ended.
Oh, I'm just intrigued. All right, out of all those Mattel films, which ones are you interested in?
None of them.
None of them? which, realistically, if you give the 8-ball one to someone good, I bet you could do something with that. Cause like you just said, Mason, the ones with no... I think it was you.
Yeah.
The ones with no prior story, no hang-ups like that. The 8-ball one, you could make a really dark sort of... Or sort of like Goonie-esque sort of horror thing out
there. Yeah, and I think... Not being directed by J.J. Abrams, I don't think you do a great job, but I think there could be something in a Hot Wheels movie.
Yeah.
Because you see the success of the Fast and Furious and they say how over the top it is. Well, this, you could just really go over the top with it and just do really insane stunts because that's the whole point of Hot Wheels. But also, do you find there's... Like, I've never watched it, but there's a weird sort of cult following for that Speed Racer movie that came out. Like,
oh no, I didn't know that.
Like, every now and then I see, like, on the film Twitter side or Instagram, the pages that I follow, where they just show shots of a film and put it in some sort of showcase to say...
There's Speed Racer?
That for some reason, I think... Did the Wachowskis do that?
No, the Wachowskis,
Yeah, and, I mean, it looks like garbage, but I think it was something where, you know, if they had a bit more money, like, put into it, like, it's very trippy visuals. And
that's developed quite a bit of a cult following the last few years as well.
It's weird. I'd probably never watch it, because it does look like a hot mess, but,
yeah.
I don't know, maybe something with that.
I just remember
John
Goodman with a chimpanzee. That's pretty much...
I remember seeing a trailer for whatever films were coming out around that time. Like, was it 2009,
10? Yeah, it was sort of...
something around then.
Star Trek 2009.
Yeah.
I think had it. I remember it being on advert on that. That's why I think that's why I associate it with Abrams, even though he didn't...
It's just really vibrant and stuff. Yeah. Like, you could just go really balls to the wall... The big orange loop-de-loops, I don't know. You could do something with that.
But then I reckon you could do it much like in the Army Men thing, where it's like they're racing around the house, where it's like off, like they're going upstairs, they're going, and all that sort of...
Yeah.
Like, go full ball with it, which sort of is what Lego sort of did tread that line, didn't it?
Yeah.
It was the thing of these things exist, and like obviously Toy Story very much does. These things live in our houses. I think it's...
Yeah,
remember, I think there's potential there.
Do you remember Beyblades? They were like,
Yes, but they already had a series.
Yeah, they were trying to make a series out of that with like, it was all dramatic, but like it just creating this whole spinning top competition of spinning tops.
I remember that very well.
Like creating like dragons and shit coming out of the Beyblades.
I've done films that have had, well, not films, audio things and pictures and stuff that have had characters named after those. One in Beyblade.
Oh, really?
Which people think was from something else. Well, there was a thing where there was a computer AI sort of program called Dizzy, which is literally what the one in Beyblade was called. All my friends were like, oh, is it like Dizzy in Starship Troopers? I'm like, yeah.
How did you find the piece of resistance?
The piece of what?
The piece of resistance.
I don't... Where am I? What, What's happening?
What's happening?
Playing dumb, Master Builder.
No, I Master Builder.
Oh, so you've never heard of the prophecy?
No,
The special?
No, no,
You're a liar.
Hi, buddy. I'm your friendly neighborhood police officer. Would you like a glass of water?
Yeah, actually.
That's too bad.
Should I go first?
You may.
Cool.
Yeah.
So, I don't know if I'll count this as a recommendation as such, because it's a bit janky as games go, but it's been a lot of, games get a lot of pass if it's fun as well as being janky, I find. Because a lot of games that really historically should have gotten a lot more shit for being badly optimised or whatever, but are fun. And this isn't that bad, to be fair. But I've just been playing, because it was on offer, the World War Z Aftermath game, which is interesting because it sort of treads the line of being based on both the book and the film, which is hard to do because the film and the book have very different, are just very different worlds. They're completely separate from each other, really. But it's sort of set in the World War. If you've not read the book, World War Z, incidentally, take that as a recommendation for a start. But you play in different parts of the world in this game, sort of helping people escape to the safe zones that are detailed in the book. And it's a lot of tower defense, sort of like shooting. And it's vast numbers of zombies you have to fight as well. But it's like, you have to, a lot of the best bits of it for me are the bits where it's like, helicopters come in to take away civilians. You need to hold back the horde for like 5 minutes. And the hordes are the ones from the film. So have either of you seen the film World War Z?
Yeah.
Yeah, so you know that the best bit of it for me in terms of how the zombies work is the way that they just become piles to the point where they can come over walls and stuff. That happens in the game, so you have to shoot them before that happens and like create safe zones. It's the book is great because it sort of details the political and sort of like actual military tactics used in a zombie war against old style zombies, which is sort of like to the point that they're so believable that like you'll find that a lot of sort of zombie things that have come out since then haven't had been about people staying in one place. They've always been about movies because Max Brooks basically made it like it's the standard by which you judge zombie things by now. So like in Britain, people survive in castles and behind the Antonine Wall and Hadrian's Wall. In Portugal, it's behind the Torre Vedras lines and things like that. And in Japan, they escape on cruise ships. Now, that happens in the game. But so it's like the zombies from... They basically try to make the story of the film conform to the book. And I quite like that. And it's a lot of fun. It's a four-player thing. It's a squad. It's a group thing, really. I think it'd be a lot more fun if you had three or four people building up defences and stuff. Unfortunately, it doesn't conform to the book in the sense that in the book, they sort of a lot of the best weapons in it are very accurate but slowly firing rifles where you can just calm down and just pick them off one by one as they're moving slowly towards you. Whereas in this, obviously, they're very fast, so you have to just stand with a machine gun and spray and pray, which is its own kind of fun, really. Very Starship Troopers-esque. A lot of the endings, like when the ones where there's helicopters, I always think of that bit in Starship Troopers where they're in the little base that's about to be overrun by the bugs and they're just firing just everywhere just to try, and then where Dizzy weirdly dies in that section. The other thing that I really like about it is they brought the Lobo in, which is the I mentioned this on our chat. Lobo is a tool in World War Z which ends up being the most useful one, where a marine designs an axe that is, or is a shovel for entrenchment, which every marine tends to carry with them, but also has an axe either side of it. One of them's curved, so you can just decapitate a zombie. And it's great in the books. It's sort of like going, we've spent millions and millions of dollars trying to come up with like orbital weapons that will hurt zombies on, you know, things you can drop from planes. And then they're just like, this one marine took out like 100 just in a day, just because he's got this shovel that he can just take the heads off with. And that is in the game. You don't get to use it quite the same way, but I was just like, yes, that's integral to the World War Z experience. The only thing I want more from it, because apparently when it first came out, it was a bit crap, and then they brought out the update, which is called Aftermath, which is one I've just played, which is better. It has first-person mode in it and has a few more levels on it. It does go around the world. It tells the different stories around the world, as the book did, where different countries deal in different ways. I just wish it had gone a bit more into that and didn't let you carry weapons across, So like, there's a thing in Russia where they don't they did quite well from the beginning into it with the army because they have AK-47s, which are and 74s, which are like notably, I can't think of the word I'm looking for, but like famously reliable and accurate and just very good at, you know. Whereas the Americans had all these fancy sort of electronic weapons and bunker busting stuff designed to fight terrorists, which was just useless against zombies. It's that kind of. I think what I would like more of it is more places around the world, because some of the more interesting stories haven't been covered in it. Like I'd like a level in Britain. I'd like a level where they're defending a castle in Britain. You get to do it in Nice, in the south of France, which is pretty cool. You get to do all that sort of stuff. But it's, I still think it's good. I think it's worth a mention because a lot of people will have passed it by because the film was kind of garbage. When actually, and I think this deserves a second go. Anyway, I've talked a long time there. I apologise.
No. I think you bring up a point because I don't remember all too much from the film. But it is something that I think I would want to read the book or...
The book is so good. You know. It's such a good... I've read it 3 or 4 times and it's every time I read it, I go, there's another bit where you go... It's just so cool that they've covered that. Like, they sort of do in the film where that Israel does really well because they figure it out from quite a an early stage that there's a problem, and then think, well, we're gonna have to invite people. It's sort of, it's such a, and none of it really makes it into the film.
No, but
there are cool things in the film. I've never understood why the whole. I mean, it must be because they ran out of money, but the whole third act of that just. They're just in Cardiff, you know. Nothing. No offense to Cardiff. You don't actually see any of Cardiff in it. That would be cool if at the last bit they were holding out in like a castle in Wales. Because in the book, like I said, a lot of the survivor communities are in Wales, not in Wales, in castles. And there's hundreds of castles in Wales. So if they'd have ended the film like they're doing that, you go, well, you've sort of weaved it back in there. I sort of, you know, rather than Brad Pitt just looking confused, drinking a Coke in that or Pepsi in that worst. Do you remember that bit?
I know.
Towards the end, where he's cured him, well, not cured himself, but he's given himself that illness, which means the zombies leave him alone, which in itself is a cool concept.
Yeah.
But there's a bit where he just gets a Pepsi out of a thing, and he just stands there and drinks a Pepsi, like, in full. And it's the worst product placement you've ever seen.
Yeah. There was a point where Fincher was attached to direct a sequel at one point, but I think that's all...
They were going to do a series. Yeah. They were going to do a series that conformed it a bit more to the book, and I think that's where a lot of the concepts for the game came from.
Yeah, it fell apart at some point, but yeah.
There's sort of things tied in, you go, that fits into the film, and that also fits. It's like someone's tried. I don't know, they've not tried very hard because it's not like the main story, but you can tell that somewhere in the writer's room, someone went, how can we make the fast zombies and the weird way they work in World War Z, the film, work with the slow zombies and the way they work in World War Z, the book, and how can we make that work? And in some levels, you go, I like what you did there. You know what I mean? But yeah, World War Z, the game I've been playing a lot of recently. That's my recommendation. Okay. Aftermath is called.
Cool. Fantastic.
Fantastic.
Okay. Do you have one, Ollie?
Yeah, I do, yeah. It's a film that I saw recently.
No.
You shock me.
I shock you. I think you'd like it too, Mason. It's called Past Lives by Celine Song.
Celine Dion.
No, Celine Song.
When you touch me like this,
when you hurt when you hold me like that.
Just have to admit that it's all coming. Hang on, a lighter. Hang on. Oh, it went out.
Can this play us out, Alex?
Can I put Celine Dion over there?
Why not?
Over it. I only realised recently that was written by Jim Steinman of Meatloaf fame. And when you actually listen to it, you go, yeah, this is basically a Meatloaf song. Yeah. Yeah, I completely understand that.
Just doing
that. Anyway, it's all coming back to you now, Ollie.
It's all coming back. Unless he's hurt his head.
He's so upset with us. I believe that your heart will go on, Ollie. I'll try and find a version of the All Coming Back to Me. I can put over it. Maybe the Grace Petrie version. She does a fantastic one.
Yeah.
Directorial debut of director Celine Song. And it's about two characters called Nora and Haesung,
who grew up in Korea as childhood sweethearts, yeah, separated when Nora's family wants to move from Korea to America, and they strike up a friendship, but they never speak for 12 or so years, and then they strike up a friendship. And basically, we sort of go through the cycle of life where they have 1 week where they reunite in America, and it sort of discusses about what ifs and like the concept of what would have happened if we'd have gone down a different path. And it's a very intimate, romantic film that really deals with ideas of fate and destiny in terms of like how cruel it is sometimes. And then, yeah, and you're always looking at overanalyzing what you already have in life, etc., in terms of what it could have been and what it should have been, and you're trying to accept what it is. But yeah, it's a really beautiful film. It's beautifully, stunningly shot. It has all these beautiful views of New York, and there's this part in a sort of spring cottage somewhere that's lit beautifully with all this natural light. And yeah, it's a beautiful film. It's really touching. It's a strong directorial debut. The writing's really sharp. Yeah, I highly recommend it. I think it's going to do pretty well come award season if it's not forgotten about later on down the year. But yeah, highly recommend it. That's Past Lives. Celine Song, not Dion.
By Celine Song.
Pricks.
You're the one who said Sion, so don't come to us.
Fucking amateur. Right, Mason, talk about what you got to fucking recommend. Right?
Whoa!
Oh my goodness.
Handbags.
It's all coming back to him now.
Dick.
Anyway.
I bet you don't watch it. You never watch what I say you watch.
What?
there's only so many hours in the day, Ollie.
And I just don't want to watch the Barney movie, Ollie. I'm sorry. yeah, my recommendation is one I've had on my list for some time. It's a French film called Le Hen.
Le Hen.
Yes, I haven't seen...
The Hate.
Or Hatred. Hatred breeds hatred. Very good film. Shot in black and white. Some great cinematography. Following three guys in... living during... in or outside of Paris. In the suburbs. A lot of riots, a lot of civil unrest, police brutality, and it just follows them for 24 hours. And yeah, I really enjoyed it. I think it's
a cracking film.
It's how old is it now? It came out in the 90s
or something. Yeah.
So,
do you know how they shot the mirror scene?
I imagine that's a body double. It just goes through a bit like that scene in Mission Impossible where they have body doubles.
Yeah, it is a bit like, they employ that technique in it, I love Le Hen. It's one of those films that I watched quite young, and then it sort of like left an impact on me because it was the first of that sort of kind of film I'd watched because I watched it in college. It was sort of my introduction to French cinema in a way, but it was very much about that sort of revolutionary sort of nature of like what Parisian modern Paris could be like, etc. It's interesting as well.
Especially because today there's still a lot of that going on, a lot of riots, so it's still very relevant as it is today than it was back then.
If you like La Haine, there's a film called, so it's got the same title as a very other famous thing, it's called Les Miserables. It's not the musical, it's not the book, it's the Victor Hugo novel. It's a completely different thing that just happens to have the same title, Les Miserables. It's set in modern Paris. It just happens.
He said that like they made the film. They went, "Oh, we've never heard of Victor Hugo." come on, guys! Sure, one of us has got to change the name.
Why it's called that is it takes the ideas of the novel and the book, and it takes like that sense of revolution, and it applies to modern politics in Paris, and it's all about brutality. It follows three coppers throughout a day during a riot, and sort of, yeah, it's an interesting take. So take out Les Miserables. I think it's on streaming somewhere.
That will replace...
it's very much
desperately
in that.
Trying to think of a pun based on one of the songs, but I can't think of it. I've all took it out after Celine Dion. I've used all my energy up.
Fucking wankers. This is why we don't do film reviews anymore, because I can't get them through. Well, like, if I slip up one word, I get like into...
He is young.
It's like that flipping... it's like that flipping Queen's Gambit fiasco where I couldn't get through that review for 5 seconds.
Makes chess sexy, everybody.
Yeah. Amazing.
I'm glad we've broken you.
You two deflate me. That's what it is.
You can't spin that back around on us.
You can't send that back.
No.
I love that I've turned off my thing, so I just can't ever see myself again on this thing. I can't see myself on Zoom, which is well at me. Anyway,
turn back time. I know where that's share. That's share. I was thinking. I can turn back time.
Weirdly, I was watching that video for something else the other day, because the video on that's filmed on the back of the USS Missouri, and I was trying to figure out if you could use it in filmmaking anymore, like the Belfast. And it just came up with Turn Back Time. I was like, what? Okay. And I went on it. And it's all filmed on the back deck of a battleship, which is an incredibly cool place to film a music video.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, anyway, by the by.
Yes. Le Hen. Right,
so is it Le Hen?
Le Hen,
is it
called? Or Le Hen, Le Hen, if you got a French accent.
Le Hen.
Yeah, I thought it was great. And I mentioned the cinematography, but there's a particular vertigo shot that I'd see everywhere, where they're overlooking Paris and it does the pull dolly focus vertigo effect. Yeah. And just in black and white, it just looked stunning. I thought it was a really impactful film, as Ollie has already said. It's
cool.
It's good. It's good.
Cool.
It's a double recommendation.
Well, I like how you two have like done like films, like really well, heart meaning films. And I was like, there's a zombie game.
Zombies.
We can shoot all of the zombies.
Zombie. Is it going to be like, are you always going to do a video game? Or are you going to do...
No, I thought about... Well, because Small Soldiers was seriously a consideration for me for this topic. I saw a short film that was purporting to be a Small Soldiers 2 thing. I don't know if it was or if it was just someone on the side, but it's quite a cool... I'll see if I can find you.
What's the next topic for our next podcast?
Right. Fucking hell.
Oh, no,
I don't want to say on recording, because we already changed the topic order.
Oh, yeah, true, yeah.
This time we were going to do something else, weren't we? In fact, where's the topics?
Well, probably our next one will be Rogue Spooks, won't it?
Oh, I guess so, yeah, Rogue Spooks. Let's just do Rogue Spooks next, then.
Our next one will be October. Yeah.
So we just do it as a standard Rogue Spooks, or should we change the way we're doing it?
What do we talk about?
I like
about
how we're doing this while we're supposed to be recording.
Yeah,
we're still...
we talk about horror stuff. We can do horror films. Yeah, just talk about horror movies. It's all good.
Horror, okay. Well, that was a... Ollie's disappeared.
I can't wait for Ollie to tell us it's...
Ollie's giving himself a blowjob. What's going on?
It's spooky season.
Yeah, coming up next we should... be spooky season.
Maybe.
All systems go, potentially.
Potentials.
Rogue Spooks 4, are we on now, or is it Rogue Spooks 5?
No, last year was 5.
5 Rogue Spooks 6. Yeah, because it was like Scream, wasn't it? Rogue 5 Pooks.
Yeah.
Yeah, Rogue Spooks 6. Good leak. Good
Lord. Rogue Spooks 666. Number of the beast.
No, that's under the 666. That's... a long way down. That's in 6 centuries.
I've broken down the next few months in terms of Ollie season. So I've got like spooky season next month, and so this is like birthday time. Blah blah blah. Next month is spooky season. November is Doctor Who season, and then Christmas is, and then obviously tis the season, and then it's like.
Then what?
When you
then
hold
what?
Me like that.
Then it's January.
When you touch me like that.
Then it's January. You prick.
Sorry, that was too funny afterwards. Well, either way, the next one will be
January's not a season. All the other months are seasons, Alex. Just so
he's
you know.
He's probably gone.
Just so you know. He's all the other months are seasons, but January, no, no one cares. It's just January.
No one cares about January.
He can think that. He can think about that. He can't think about that yet.
So these seasons,
he's got his Ollie like seasons planned out month by month. Because that's how long an Ollie season lasts.
Well, the January one will be our New Year's one anyway, won't it?
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know what we'll do for that. We haven't even discussed that yet. But let's wrap this shit up while we still can. Oh look, an hour and 29 minutes. Oh, an hour and 30 minutes exactly. There we go.
Bye.
Bye bye. Bye bye. Good luck ending that. Jesus. Do you want us to do a proper ending? Do you want us... Fuck. All right, I'll stop recording. If I could just turn back down. I don't know.